We're broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios.
Visit MTE.com.
Middle Tennessee Electric.
Serving to make life better.
Since 1936.
This is the WGNS Action Line. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
You're tuned to WGNS, and our guest today in studio, Dr. Dan Rudd. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Scott. Doing well.
Well, kind of wet and rainy out there, and I know a lot of people are afraid of getting things like the flu and the cold and COVID as well.
That's right. You know, we're headed into the peak season here in the next month or two. Right now, the numbers are still low on everything, but we're in a much better place than we were 2 or 3 years ago.
Man, 2 or 3 years ago, it was quite different out there, wasn't it?
Incredibly different, yeah. I think that the key to that really is what was initially stated as herd immunity. And we were facing the coronavirus mutation, which was a totally new virus. And there really was absolutely no immunity in the population. And so that was really the critical thing. And, you know, now we are at a different place where we basically have numbers that are very low now. We had some peak in the summer, which was expected. We are headed into really a good number as far as our hospitalizations and deaths, very low numbers. And, you know, I think that one of the things that people take for granted is that maybe they don't need to get vaccinated anymore. And I think that it's very individual. You know, people who are at higher risk should be vaccinated. If you're over 65, if you have serious medical illnesses, if, you know, babies that have medical problems, they need to be vaccinated. And I think that, and of course, you know, one of the big things that vaccination does also is it cuts down the risk of the long COVID, which is a syndrome that occurs following COVID infections, even mild ones, that can have long-term 6 to 8 months, a year of, you know, brain fog, fatigue, a variety of sort of, you know, hard to identify symptoms that really can be fairly disabling. And the COVID vaccine does diminish the risk of that.
And again, we're talking about all different types of illnesses, but again, COVID, that was the one that really changed the medical landscape. Those changes are still impacting us today.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that it affected everything in society, our whole culture, and cost lots of money economically. But, you know, we still have influenza A and B, which I'll tell you, influenza is a serious illness. We are used to it because, you know, it's been here forever. But this year we're facing a variant of influenza A that is coming out of Asia. You know, most of these influenza viruses are transmitted really by birds, by migrating birds and into populations. They cross over from birds to humans. Influenza vaccines vary. We have different kinds. We have traditional influenza vaccines. We have high dose and we have nasal spray. And I think that the high dose influenza vaccine is really the recommended for those over 65. It has 3 to 4 times the antigen in each injection, which really makes it more potent. And realize influenza can be a fatal illness. It's something that can lead into a bacterial pneumonia, respiratory failure, hospitalizations, respirator dependency, and death. And so it's something that it's, you know, a lot of times we think of it as a cold. A cold typically is due to a virus called a rhinovirus, which is not nearly as serious. Cold viruses, you know, can occur any time of year, mostly though in winter. And it's something that we don't want to be sick. We don't have a vaccine against a rhinovirus. So we can't really prophylaxis it for that. But remember, with influenza, if you're tested and you're diagnosed quickly, there is medication that really helps cut down the seriousness and the length of the illness, Tamiflu. There's a couple of brands, but it is something that is important to know and to seek help with your provider. I think, you know, your doctor's office will help you with that.
And by the way, our phone number, if you have any general medical related questions or questions about COVID, feel free to text those in at 615-893-1450. Again, 893-1450 is our number if you'd like to text in this morning. Now, for those who go to the doctor, they're told that they've got, you know, the symptoms of a cold or something along those lines. You often hear that term, well, my doctor told me to get a cold pack, or I was prescribed some type of cold pack. What does that mean when people say that?
That's a good question. I don't really know what a cold pack is, but I would say it's probably something along the lines of DayQuil or NyQuil, something that is a combination over-the-counter medicine. Remember, though, that NyQuil has about 24% alcohol in it. So, you know, for those who are who worry about that, that's something to really pay attention to. DayQuil doesn't, but the NyQuil does. And it's the biggest things to do are to really stay hydrated, maintain your nutrition, watch for any complications such as fever, productive cough that lasts over a week, anything that may indicate an early onset of pneumonia, because that can be very easy to miss, and especially in older people, because the symptoms can be mild. It can be just one of sort of decreasing energy, tired all the time, coughing, sometimes a lot of fever. Sometimes, paradoxically, in older people, you can actually have a low body temperature. And so, you know, just be aware of illness and changes in your overall health status.
We do have one question here. It says, last night when I went to bed, did not feel good and had a temperature of 99. This morning, my thermometer read 100. And I was just curious if I should go to the doctor for this, or is this something I could kind of wait out?
I think it's something you could probably wait out. I don't know how old you are and what other kind of medical conditions you have, but one of the things that's interesting with COVID this year is especially is a lot of times it's starting more with a sore throat. You know, one of the things we learned a few years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, was we saw a lot of the taste and smell changes that occurred. That seems to be shifting a little bit with the variants that are out there this year. The variants, you know, these are constantly changing, and it's a further down the line change from the Omicron, which was, you know, the prevalent virus back in 2022 in that time period. But, you know, if you're running a fever that over 101, 102, it's not responding to Tylenol, and you're feeling poorly, you feel sick, then you should go in and get tested.
And whenever you have a fever that's, let's say, 100 or above, does that fever itself make you feel, you know, exhausted?
Absolutely. It can be, it can drain you. But, you know, ahead of that, I do recommend for people to get their vaccinations in. The flu vaccine, the appropriate dose of the flu vaccine based on their age, their COVID vaccine, I think is a good thing. Remember now, we have both the mRNA COVID vaccines and the regular type COVID vaccine that is not mRNA. It's a Novavax vaccine. And for those who don't want the mRNA, the Novavax is available, and you can get that. Influenza vaccine, remember, go high dose if you're older, regular dose if you're younger. There's also the RSV, respiratory syncytial virus, which is an you know, fortunately, we have a vaccine for that now, which is fairly new. I think it came out in 2023. And for especially little kids, babies, they've had a very very difficult time with RSV ending up in the hospital. And also, it's important in older people, especially over 75.
Now, if you do have a temperature, but let's say you don't have all these other symptoms other than just the tiredness, then is resting what you should be doing, or could you theoretically still go to work and be okay, or are you putting everybody else in danger?
Well, a low-grade fever, you know, I hate to say temperature, we all have a temperature, even after we're dead, you know. And so, but a low-grade fever alone is not a reason to really isolate. I think that if you're coughing and sneezing, then you're spreading virus. And so that's, you know, something that depending on your job, depending on a lot of variables, you know, and there's no set time now that you need to, quote, isolate. You know, when during the COVID pandemic, it was crazy. I mean, people were doing these, you know, 10-day isolations, things like that. They were isolating until they had a negative COVID test, lots of things. And, you know, I think that now you don't need to do a reflex 10-day isolation because you have a fever. I think it's playing it by ear and being responsible.
Looking back to last year, that did have a lot of negative impacts on society as a whole because you had kids who were missing 10, 20 days of school.
Well, sometimes schools closed.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they would have 10 or 15 kids in a class that were sick, and everybody acted like, you know, it's run for the hills time.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think we're over that now. There's always been wintertime upper respiratory illnesses. Kids that need to stay home, stay home. Kids that need to go to school, go to school. I mean, and it should be that way.
It's kind of like we lost some of our common sense during that time period.
Well, and there were so many different incentives that were out there to facilitate that. All kinds of, you know, rules regarding federal monies, the way hospitals did, the way businesses operated, you know, a lot of people moving to remote work. So many changes.
Yeah. Here's another question. It says, if I had COVID over the summer, do I still need to get this new vaccine that everybody's talking about?
Again, I don't know how old you are, but if you're, you know, under 65, there's no reason probably to do that. If you're over 65 and have other illnesses, then I would get it.
So really, we need to focus on, you know, age groups and what existing illnesses you may have if you are undergoing cancer treatment, for example.
Exactly.
So things like that. Just look at that, I guess, number one.
Well, we're getting back to a more common sense approach. You know, we're realizing that we're going to have respiratory illnesses with us. They're here. They always have been, and they always will be. We can do things to mitigate the severity because we do know that vaccinations help to cut the severity, cut the likelihood of hospitalization, and decrease the risk of death in older people.
Now, if somebody asks a question that you've already answered, I guess we'll just touch base on it again. But some of these, I see one person ask, I've heard RSV is hitting earlier this year. How can parents tell if it's RSV or if it's just a regular cold? So they said parent, I guess they're talking about their kids.
Yeah, RSV is not a worry in kids that are over a couple of years old. It may occur, but I mean it's not really anything to be panicked about. The vaccine is most important in the little babies and in the older group. Over 65, 75 years old. You know, in between there, if you don't have any serious medical illnesses, then it's really not an issue. Now, if you are 40 and you have a bone marrow cancer and you're on immunotherapy, yes, that is a marker for somebody at higher risk, and I would take every precaution that you can in that situation.
And then if, you know, it's been a long time since I've had little kids or babies or newborns, how often are parents usually taking those newborns, you know, for checkups to the doctor anyway?
Well, I think you should follow the pediatrician's recommended schedules. And so simply take your kids to their pediatrician based on the recommendations the doctor gives you.
And we had another question here asking how safe the vaccine is. And I'm sure questions like that come from things that you read online on social media. There's a lot of fears out there. But how safe are these vaccines people are getting?
I believe they're very safe. I think that, you know, there will be adverse reactions. And, you know, there are so many stories that have occurred coming off the internet. I mean, everything from, you know, we do know that the mRNA vaccines have an increased risk of myocarditis, especially in young men, for some reason. We don't know why. It's something that can happen. It's fairly rare. You know, and probably a lot of those men didn't need the vaccine anyway because they were in the age group that was relatively immune. But realize that right now we have herd immunity. Herd immunity is a wonderful thing because it really cuts down that spread. And, you know, we were seeing in 2021, 2022, you know, numbers that were like 5 to 8 per 100,000 as far as COVID deaths. Now we're seeing less than 1, and it's flat. I mean, and it's been flat this year. Now, we had a summer peak, but the peak was still very low compared to what we'd had. And I think that the numbers now are going to just get better. Now, it doesn't mean that there won't be a need for vaccines. Vaccines have a very appropriate place. There's no telling overall in all the vaccinations we do how many lives have been saved. It's incredible. It's done a lot. But at the same time, you know, we got into this hurry up and rush, shut down everything. You wouldn't be allowed to go to church. You know, you could always go to the liquor store, but you couldn't go to church. And, you know, if you didn't have a vaccine. And so I think that a lot of that fear is dissipating, and it should, because we know now that the overall risk is fairly low. But for those people who do get very sick, well, that means their risk was high. And, you know, in trying to discriminate between who should and who shouldn't get it, I think we have to look at risk. And that's what I like to focus on.
When you hear information about different medications and, you know, the adverse reactions, the studies where it says, you know, you could have a heart attack or so on, are those studies, are they actually looking deeper into the reasons why those who had a heart attack had a heart attack? I mean, they could have had any number of things wrong with them, but they were just part of the study group, so they counted as, well, you know, X amount of people had a heart attack after taking this medicine.
Absolutely. That's something that they look at all the time because they have events that occur around the time of, say, a vaccination that are adverse.
Yeah.
You know, but it's interesting because one of the things that occurred was early on in people who had been vaccinated, they found that there were was an increased risk of homicide. We know that wasn't the vaccine.
Yeah.
But it was there. It was a number. And I think that, you know, looking at, you know, what we're talking about risk-wise and the panic that occurred, nobody likes to be forced to take an injection. We should have free will because it's just like when you get out and you drive your car, there's a risk. And, you know, if you face that risk and do it in a safe way, you're going to have less risk. And I think that we all in this country like freedom.
Yeah. And of course, during the first part of COVID, whenever that first hit, we did hear stories about almost what I would consider forced vaccinations, especially when it comes to employees at certain companies, certain businesses, that they were requiring all employees, if they wanted to keep their job, to have a vaccine.
And military.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, you know, that came from this, you know, unfortunate series of events that came out of the White House at that time. And the this idea that they were helping people by forcing people. And I think that proved to actually cause a tremendous increase in distrust.
I think it scares people.
Yeah.
And when you hear about, let's say, for example, vaccines that children have to have when they go to school, you always hear about some group of parents questioning, you know, I don't want my child to get this vaccine.
Right.
Are those vaccines proven to be safe at this point?
I think they are. I think that, but at the same time, you know, we're in a sort of a tenuous situation with, you know, people should have the right to decide for their children what to do. But I think that we want people to be educated and to understand that, you know, the benefits and the risks. And I think that there's so many questions that have developed that, you know, cause confusion, such as the risk of autism. You know, another thing. It's hard to tell. We know for a fact autism has increased in frequency. We have no idea for sure why.
You know, education really is at the backbone of everything, but there are some things, some segments of life or of medicine that are hard for the general public to understand.
Well, and it's because there's debate even in the scientific community. There's no clear-cut answer. People stand on one side or the other. And, you know, and when you hear the things that occur in society, then it makes everybody wonder.
Yeah. Now, if for doctors out there, for nurses out there, it would be, it seems to me, looking back over the years, it would be hard to stand on one side versus the other in opinions because of the fact that there's always new science coming about.
Well, I think that's really the definition of science. You know, science is not a nailed down fact. It evolves as we learn more. Things change, people's opinions change, policy should change. But, you know, there's some things that I think that, you know, in the past, we've just gone with. You know, from the time of the polio vaccines, parents just said, well, if this is what is recommended by the schools, then we're going to do it. And, you know, and it was an easier time. Because number one, there weren't that many vaccines, and they've gradually accumulated now to where we have this regimen of vaccines that basically, you know, span the gamut.
Yeah. And then you got to wonder, you know, if children are getting all these vaccines or adults are getting all these vaccines at once, what types of interactions are occurring between the vaccines?
Exactly. And I think that, you know, for instance, you know, now with the COVID and flu and RSV vaccines, you know, there's still some debate about whether you should get all three at once. You know, some are separating the RSV from the other two. You know, it's one of those things that's very difficult. One of the things, though, that I think is an important vaccine that gets overlooked sometimes is the shingles vaccine. The shingles vaccine is a vaccine that now it's the newest one is Shingrix. It's a two-shot regimen, one and the next one at 2 months. But it helps to really decrease the risk of acute herpes zoster, which is a rash due to the herpes virus. But one of the surprising things that's showing up is that the vaccine also seems to decrease the risk of developing Alzheimer's disease.
Oh, wow.
And which is something that, you know, there's a lot of debate about whether the virus causes chronic inflammation in the brain leading to Alzheimer's disease. And there is numbers that are coming out now show in women maybe a 30% decrease, and men maybe 25, maybe 20. But, you know, that those kind of numbers are significant considering the morbidity that comes with Alzheimer's disease. And I think that, you know, plus the shingles rash, the zoster rash itself can be very debilitating and follow into what's called postherpetic neuralgia, which is a condition where the nerves that are in the area where the rash occurred can be chronically irritated and cause long-term, years-wise, pain.
That sounds painful.
It is. It is very painful. And it, especially if it's on your face, an area that it can really last a long time. And so I think that that's a vaccine that I'm a strong advocate for, because it's something that, you know, people need to be sure that they have had that. The insurance companies put an age on it, but I'll tell you, I'm seeing a lot of herpes zoster of this rash that's occurring in the 40-year-old group and 40, 45-year-old. And so I really advocate for earlier use of it.
Now, for someone to get shingles, do they have to have had a history where they had chickenpox in the past or something along those lines?
They do, but that can be missed so easily, because you can have chickenpox that is one pox. You won't even notice it. And so, you know, the idea, well, I don't remember having chickenpox. Well, you might not. But it's one of those things that the virus doesn't take a lot of show to occur and to establish itself in your body.
You know, I remember having chickenpox as a kid, but
right.
I don't recall a time where my kids ever had chickenpox. It seems like you hear less and less about chickenpox in kids today. Is there a number?
Because of the vaccines they're getting.
So there's a big difference today.
Yeah. But it doesn't mean that they won't have the virus still in their brain.
So when they are at the right age, they need to get that shingles vaccine then.
I definitely recommend it, yeah.
And so for those out there listening who are, let's say, in their 30s or 40s, what age is the right age to get that vaccine?
Well, there's debate on that, because insurance companies and the CDC recommends it, I think, when you're over 55. Now, insurance may not pay for it before that. And so people can get it, but it's self-pay. And so that's something to take into account.
And that can have an impact on the underlying nerves as well?
Yes.
So what about those who have problems that are related to the nerves? I mean, I guess any number of issues.
Well, that still won't really affect whether or not you get this vaccine.
I had another question here that's kind of an interesting question. It says, Dr. Rudd, you've been with us since the start of the pandemic. What's your biggest takeaway 6 years later?
Probably the biggest takeaway is that we're dealing with a virus that we've encountered that we had never experienced before. I cannot really guess why that is. It's just a fact. And I think it gives us a template as far as how to address future instances that may occur like this, and realizing that, just like was predicted initially, herd immunity is critical. You know, it will be devastating to get these viruses into the society initially, because there's no immunity. But once it gets established and it's in the population, it will modulate.
You know, over the years, I think different age groups that are able to look back and say, you know, I remember when this medical fear came about, or when this vaccine came out. And for my age group, the biggest thing was not only COVID, but AIDS and HIV. Those were the big things that came out and people talked a lot about.
Oh, they were huge. And, well, you know, polio, prior to when I was born, and say 1950, there were 50,000 people on iron lungs from polio.
Wow.
50,000. Then the next thing we know, we see HIV. And that was about 1980. 1980, HIV was a fatal illness. Everyone, almost, there's an exception, but almost everyone who got it died. There were doctors who died because they had a blood exposure. There were a lot of deaths. Following the development of the antiviral drugs, which really was spurred on by HIV, you know, the next thing we faced was COVID.
And the COVID aftermath and during COVID, I mean, that was the biggest thing that a lot of people, really age 20 plus, are probably ever going to experience as far as a major breakout, at least I hope.
Maybe. I think there will be more. I don't know what they'll be, of course, but I anticipate it because that's the nature of infectious diseases. You know, they are constantly mutating, and 99 out of 100 don't turn into anything, but one will. And we don't know what that is, but one of the things that's happened now with technology, we have this incredible ability to rapidly address, to identify, and to build defenses, either drugs or vaccines or other things that can be done so much faster than what was possible. And so I'm very optimistic. I don't think this is a fatalistic type thing at all. I think that our technology is coming about to serve us, and I think it will.
Again, Dr. Dan Rudd on the air with us this morning. We are going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back. And feel free to text in any question you may have to 615-893-1450. Again, we'll be right back.
Shopping at the ReStore.
Hi, I am Tina. You never know what you may find at the Habitat ReStore.
Hi, I'm Wendy.
Hey, this is Rocky. You never know what you'll find at the Habitat ReStore.
Shopping at the ReStore.
Look, try the Habitat ReStore. We have used appliances.
Hey, we have refrigerators, microwave, gently used washers and dryers.
We're hiring at the Habitat ReStore. Stop by 850 Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard for more information.
You will leave a store humming.
Hi, this is Dave Kivenemi at Music World and Drummer's Den, 2762 South Church Street in Murfreesboro. We're across from Indian Hills Golf Course. Come out and see us for all of your music needs. We've got guitars, pianos, amps, drums, PA equipment, rentals, lessons, most anything you can think of in the music genre. Come see us at Music World and Drummer's Den on South Church. We're across from Indian Hills Golf Course.
From the backwoods, to the classroom, to the businesses, to the homes, to everywhere, it's Rocky the Raccoon, here to talk trash and how to do it better. It's the Recycled Minute, brought to you by RecycleRightTN.com.
I am flipping bottles for good, not for games. Hey, I'm Rocky the Raccoon. You know all those bottles you go through each and every month? You buy them at the grocery store. They may be filled with orange juice. They may be filled with soda. Or you may buy a bunch of those water bottles. Well, you can use some of them to make a weight set out of, you know, for your next workout. So whenever you put those leg warmers on, you can also fill up those bottles that you got with water or sand. Seal the top on tight, and there you have it. Free fitness gear. It saves plastic and tones your body at the same time. Now that's smart recycling. For RecycleRightTN.com, I'm Rocky the Raccoon.
And that's today's Recycled Minute. Find the closest place to recycle near you by going to RecycleRightTN.com.
This is Peter Demas, and our family is inviting your family to come eat with us at Demas's restaurant. Right now, there's this big talk of tariffs. So we start looking at where do all of our suppliers get their product from. Even though we're buying it from, and it looks like it's from an American company, but they're getting it from China. What we're trying to do is we're trying to give people the value. When the prices do go up, we have at least a cushion to work off of. Come eat with us at Demas's restaurant on Northwest Broad Street.
We're talking with Peggy Parton. What have you enjoyed most about Adams Place?
The wonderful people that are here, and certainly all of those that take care of us and guide us, and they have something going all the time, and It's delightful. And the security that you feel here, it's wonderful.
This is Terry Deal. Come tour Adams Place and discover living a dream in your senior years.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
You're listening to WGNS, and our guest today in studio, Dr. Dan Rudd, medical doctor, and we've been talking a little bit about COVID and vaccinations and things to look out for, things to watch for. Here's another text message. It says, I'm old enough to remember getting the Salk polio immunization in a sugar tube. Why don't they give that alternative and other vaccinations these days? Vaccinations like COVID, RSV, or the flu?
I think that was probably a sugar cube. But yeah, that's the way it was given in schools. They would put a drop of the liquid, which was pink, on a sugar cube, and the kids loved to chew it up. And so they don't do that because what's called bioavailability. We do not get the same dose orally as we do injection-wise. And you can take a much smaller dose when you inject it than you can if you take it orally.
So when they say Salk, S-A-L-K, polio immunization, what is that called?
Yes, it was basically invented by Dr. Salk, S-A-L-K. And, you know, it was one of the two main polio vaccines. And, you know, polio, you know, has a long history. It's very interesting because, you know, you don't really realize the world adjusted to its presence. It was dangerous. It was, you know, a lot of times it was thought that it spread at swimming pools in the summer, and moms would keep their kids away from public pools. There weren't a lot of private pools at that time. And so, you know, moms would keep them away so they wouldn't go and get polio. Polio was one of those things that occurred in a spectrum of disease. It could occur in a spinal cord level so that you basically couldn't move anything below your neck. Wow. It could occur in a very mild way so you had maybe a mild limp. President Franklin Roosevelt was diagnosed with it when he was 40 and became where he really couldn't stand. He had metal braces for his legs. And the press helped hide that because they didn't want the president to look weak. And so, you know, we can't really think back, but people accepted the disease as it was because there just wasn't a lot you could do for it until the vaccines came out, and that was in the late 50s, I think. And so, you know, a lot of things have changed, but, you know, adjusting to disease and what exists, people do that.
We don't have a lot of time left, but let's try to get to at least one or two more questions. This one says, how safe is it to visit grandparents this Thanksgiving if the kids are in school and exposed daily to things like COVID?
I would visit. I wouldn't miss any family event. It's important.
And this is another question that I know you answered for the most part, but it asks again. Let's see. Parents keeping their kids home from school. What symptoms should they really look for before making them stay home from school?
High fever, a lot of coughing and sneezing are things that I would look at. Mild symptoms, send them to school.
If anybody has questions about COVID, is the CDC website a good place to turn, or are there other websites that are better?
I think the CDC website is good. I look at it probably once a week. You know, there's so much on the internet that it's not trustworthy.
Yeah, it's hard to find correct information.
It is, and I think that talking to your healthcare provider, your doctor, is a good thing to do. I think that, but we're out of this fear zone. I think we've got to get back to living regular life. We've got to have social interactions. You know, you're going to be around little snotty-nosed kids. That's part of life.
Yep.
And they're going to sneeze on you. You know, and if you are ill with other serious medical problems, you should probably stay home. But I don't think that I would restrict any of your family activities based on just normal cold symptoms.
It's like if you go too far one way, then you're going to suffer mentally all these other ways that are just as bad.
Well, it was such a sad thing when people couldn't visit relatives in the hospital. They couldn't go to weddings. They couldn't go to funerals. It was a terrible thing, and it had a big impact that I think we've got to resist.
Again, Dr. Dan Rudd with us today, and we appreciate you joining us.
Happy to be here. Good to see you again, Scott.
You too. Right now, it's 9 o'clock. You're listening to WGNS Murfreesboro, and we do have more news and information coming your way next.
WGNS is powered by Middle Tennessee Electric. MTE's EV Car Club has hundreds of members and growing. EV owners, enthusiasts, and anyone interested in learning more about electric vehicles is encouraged to sign up at mte.com/EV Car Club.